Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview this weekend's Singapore Grand Prix. It's just the Double Dragons this evening, Mr. Timo Albus Daly. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Coming off the back of a surprisingly good weekend in Baku. I mean, we were saying in our preview episode that we wanted it to be a bit more like the Baku Grand Prix of yesteryear, and it was more like that. It wasn't necessarily the carnage that we normally expect from there, but it was kind of Singapore last year with what you and I were comparing notes to just after the race, and that suits me just fine. And very appropriate considering we're going to talk about Singapore, so I don't know if we're now expecting more of the same or Baku from yesteryear in Singapore, which is also kind of just Singapore. Either way, I'm up for it. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've had a busy day in the office, but I mean, there's been some interesting news developments. We've been jotting down our script for this. It always sort of starts off like a week or two in advance. We sort of jot down the interesting news, and there's some bits I'm actually quite excited to talk about, as well as actually the Singapore Grand Prix that's coming up. So I'm full of beans and ready to go. So we'll jump right into the news. And the big news, potentially, is that Liam Lawson is going to be joining VCARB in 2025, or Toro Rosso, or Minardi.
I've got Minardi originally.
Or, yeah, or what else has it been called recently? Scuderia, AlphaTauri, that's it, yeah. Mm. I've lost track of the names. Was it also Stoddart at one point, I want to say? I think Stoddart owned it.
Very
that was what
possible.
It's called Minardi. Anyway, the fact is, Liam Lawson could be joining the outfit for 2025, and this would mean replacing Daniel Ricciardo. I have some interesting theories on the actual sort of long-term implications of this. We're really waiting for this to be confirmed, but the powers that be suggest that it is happening. We'll get to the powers that be in due course, we'll get to them in a minute.
If true, though, I can understand it, and I'm all for it, because Liam Lawson does deserve a seat on the grid. We saw that from the evidence last year alone, and if we'd based it off Yuki's performance from last year, you wouldn't have been surprised if he'd gotten his seats. They still really wanted to give Ricciardo a go, so it's kind of all gone a bit topsy-turvy there. Ricciardo and the car haven't gone along as well as I would have liked to, and Perez seems to be staying at Red Bull, but that's a whole other discussion as to why that is. And it is the right move for Minardi, because they kind of need to be the team for new talent, which means after next year, Yuki probably needs to watch out, because there's plenty of F2 and F3 drivers waiting in the wings, some of which we'll get to in a minute. Ricciardo would be one of those things where, as we'll get to, but I'll just mention now, I'd like to have him to at least see out the rest of the season, because it just seems unnecessarily cool to cut it short. If he is looking to stay in racing, though, I quite like the idea of him going off to IndyCar next year. There's plenty of seats still on offer there, and the Americans absolutely love him. So that could be a match made in heaven. I think that if you can get someone like Marcus Ericsson and a few of the other drivers that have gone over there who were in F1 briefly, let's put it like that, then a driver with his caliber should get along pretty well there. So there might be a silver lining yet from all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I hadn't considered Ricciardo going to IndyCar, which actually, now you've said it, I quite like. Sensible call. My other theory was they put
sensible
him on the back burner again, but he is this time the sort of looming pressure over Perez. Although the Perez thing is quite interesting, because of course Red Bull came out and said, look, the car hasn't been right since, what, Spain last year? And at what point did Perez really
Not
start
that you
to
noticed
drop off?
It.
Not that you noticed it, because Verstappen is better at driving around a faulty car. This is where my evidence gets a bit hazy, because I'm going to call upon Drive to Survive as my reference. But
oh dear Lord.
Yeah, there is a bit of logic to this. When did we get the sort of Toto Wolff saying, Checo has been saying your car is fucked, I have the messages? That came from the Spanish Grand Prix last year. So at what point do we go, okay, Perez didn't fall off. Essentially, the car just got terrible and Max is just better at driving around that. Now that Red Bull have understood that maybe they developed in the wrong direction and started altering the car again, that's where we saw the good performance from Perez in Baku. One, he enjoys the circuit, knows it well. But two, the car is being altered once again to sort of get a bit better, a bit more tameable, a bit more balanced. And that's where his performance strength came from once more. So I think it's a double-edged
sword. I suppose
that's
why Singapore could be quite interesting, considering that was their chink in the armor last year. So are they doubling down on that sort of approach? Or will it somehow be where they bounce back this time around and it's their one last ray of hope before next season?
I mean, we'll have to wait and see. Perez has won at Singapore before. He enjoys a street circuit. He enjoys a sort of demanding circuit where you've got to get a car stopped, turned, and then gone again. That's very much his sort of forte of it. And certainly one with challenging conditions for the tires as well, where he can sort of be the tire whisperer that we know him to be. So I think Perez's sort of seat is looking a lot more confirmed now that Red Bull have found actually it's not him being terrible, it's the car being a bit dire.
Or it's
So
not just him being terrible
Or
out
it's a
there.
combination of the two in different proportions, regardless. That's my overarching theory there, but they might still have Ricciardo sort of looming over him as like a floating
It
driver.
could be the thing if he goes off to IndyCar and then Perez drops off halfway through the season, considering IndyCar finishes in August next year, that would be perfect timing to just go, do you just wanna come
Gonna come
back
back.
after the summer break? And we'll let you have a go in this just before the new regs turn in. I wouldn't mind that either, to be fair, because in theory, calendars working out as they do, they could ditch him just before the summer break. Ricardo could, considering he doesn't necessarily do terribly, but not so well that he's fighting for a championship in IndyCar, that he can afford to miss maybe the last round so that he could be there for, what is it, Zandvoort or Monza, and then drive on for the rest of the season, have maybe that one final win that we keep going on about. A bit like Alonso at this point. Thankfully, not as long a gap,
No.
and hopefully doesn't get there. But then maybe he gets a third and final attempt at finishing an F1 career on a high. Because let's face it, like Perez, he's not forgotten how to drive. It's just there's some combination of elements there that's just screwing them both over in different ways, and it's quite interesting. And would be worth trying to find a way to double down on and find the details for and talk to all kinds of people and find all these sorts of bits of information out. But we're gonna have to do that another day, I think.
I think a
But
good person to
there is
speak
a
to on that
plan in
would
place for
be,
me on that one.
I think the final point, I think a good person to speak to would be friend of the podcast, Martin Villari, driver coach. He's able to sort of analyze it. I think it's down to driving style of Danny Ric and Sergio Perez. Their driving style isn't one that's supported by the current chassis that RB and Red Bull are putting together. I think that's where possibly we're seeing that sort of fall apart happening from, but that'd be something to discuss at a later point in time. We get Martin back on, which we will do. We're a great guest and love having him on. The important news this weekend is, of course, we have F1 Academy.
Yes, and we have a wildcard entry in the form of Ella Lloyd, which I'm quite excited about with this one. Ella's livery and race suit as well is going to be quite interesting because it's going to spotlight F1 Academy's Discover Your Drive program, so very much in keeping with the program. And she's currently competing in British F4, where she sits in P9 at the moment, two rounds to go, having been on the podium three times already this year in Silverstone, Lock Hill, and Bunnington. She was also vice champion in the Ginetta GT Championship last year, prior to obviously making the step up to single-seater racing. So she's doing a pretty decent job, I'd say. And I love this man. It's not the last that we see of her, because I think I mentioned this back when we had F1 Academy in Zandvoort, but at least two-thirds of the grid won't be back next year because of the rules that they have about the two seasons. So this would be a great audition for her, especially with her solid racing career so far. So a bit like we've seen with Behrmann recently. Here's maybe what I can do if you give me an opportunity. But he's obviously got it all signed, sealed, and delivered. She's still waiting there, but this would be great for her. And Singapore is such a great track to test your mettle on. I think nothing against Zandvoort or these sorts of places, but Singapore is Singapore. You know, it's not going to be straightforward.
Yeah, we saw W Series, its final ever race was at Singapore, and it was a really good race. And again, it was one of those ones that shakes up the grid. It tests the mettle of the drivers, and the ones that come out on top do look like superstars. And like you said, with Behrmann, if you can have a great sort of like tryout, a great sort of showcase of what you can do, that is what you need. And I think Ella Lloyd getting this spot coming in again, she's got a really good sort of record to date. And again, P9 and
You
British
think about it,
F4, it's a
this
hot
rookie
series.
season.
Yeah, you come along, you do that sort of trial and see how it goes, and this could prove really useful for her. Speaking of other drivers that we've always mentioned, F1 Academy were likely to not see a lot of the drivers return because of the 2 year rule. It's getting increasingly unlikely that Bottas will be on the grid next year. Talks at Sauber suggest that Gabriele Bortoleto will be joining the team on loan from McLaren because he's of course a McLaren junior driver. Fair. He's doing really well in Formula 2, just taking the lead of the championship. Really solid driver, really
Be nice
quick.
if a champion actually got a chance to go into Formula One the next year. Be making make a nice change, wouldn't it?
It would be a rare thing indeed. The only other seat on the grid available is that RB next to Yuki, as we've already mentioned. Obviously, Helmut Marko was very much sort of the leaking point for the story about potentially Liam Lawson
As
coming in
always.
for next season. He's also, or there are hints that maybe Lawson might be replacing Danny Ric from as early as after Singapore, so he'd be stepping in for Kota. But again, it's Helmut Marko. I will be handing out pinches of salt after the recording. Ralf Schumacher, though, was actually the source for DR3 being booted post Singapore. So, again, pinches of salt for that one. He's had some interesting
I
takes
also
over the
think,
years.
just on that note, it would be a curious call to ditch him just before Kota, considering the popularity that Ricardo has there. You would question the logic there. But then again, we have been questioning Red Bull's logic for some time
Yeah,
now.
you'd keep him on to sell a few more hats, maybe.
Well, if you're
But
keeping Perez purely just to sell tickets at the Mexican Grand Prix and you're being strong-armed
allegedly.
into doing that, well, yes,
Allegedly.
allegedly,
Formula One
then you
and
would
Liberty
do the
Media.
same thing with.
Yeah.
Well, yes, but you think if that logic's at play, then this logic should be at play for Red Bull.
Yeah, we'll
They need to
mention
sell
it.
some more cans.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Bortoleto makes sense. Not surprised. He sits sort of. Yeah, Bottas. Yeah, it makes sense. It's not really surprising that he's being dropped, really. He sits P22 in a 20 driver championship behind his teammate, but also behind Sargeant, Colapinto, and Bearman, two drivers that have only won two races so far, and Logan Sargeant, a driver that has since been dropped for two races. So it's not looking great. Interestingly, however, Colapinto has done enough in the past two races for James Vowles to go, that's a really good driver. I want to try and keep him in Formula One.
Yeah.
Sauber, about that spare seat, would you be interested in taking Franco Colapinto? And I think that'd be a really interesting move. Again, he's proven he's got some really good talent. If he can prove it again in Singapore, some of the more conventional circuits coming up, I think if he can sort of do the Liam Lawson thing and prove he's got the continuity to do it, then we're going to be on something. It's not the sort of flash in a pan style stuff we saw from Nyck de Vries.
It would be the awkward thing of the only person who could beat an F2 champion into an F1 seat is the guy that's was in sixth place just before he left F2 and then gets to drive in Formula One and gets points there. And you think that is somehow one of those, if you're playing one of these massive card role playing games, that this does bypass a lot of the systems for you to get ahead quite easily. And you go, damn, I wish I had one of those. In terms of Bottas, though, I think it's good if he doesn't come back next year, to be honest, because he should have probably bowed out after he departed from Mercedes and left on a bit of a high. I always think this with a lot of drivers, where they stay around maybe a little bit longer than they should have, and you wonder how much they should have stayed. I mean, Kimi, as much as I loved him, he didn't do an awful lot, but you give him a bit more time there because he's Kimi. Bottas, he's got a fun element to him at the moment, but it's nowhere near on that same level, I think. So it's one of those awkward things. Like you say, he's 22nd in a championship where all of these drivers are ahead of him. It's rookies younger than him, only been in a couple of Grand Prix each. One of them is just not even there, and even when he was still somehow ahead of him. So it's all just a bit writings on the wall. And I think I mentioned this maybe in our Baku preview whenever we last talked about this, when he suddenly piped up when he's been talking about contract negotiations that, well, you should look at my time at Mercedes to see what I'm capable of, and you shouldn't focus too much on the last couple of years and go, that's not how that works.
Yeah, that's not how the
You're
game's
the old
played.
adage of you're only as good as your last race. And if you have a championship or two, then you get a little bit more of a leeway there. And if you have a few Grand Prix, then fair enough, which he does. But also, still got the last 2 years where not much has happened and no points at all this year. You think back to Alonso with that McLaren. I always bring that one up in particular, Alonso and Button. They still managed to drag it into the points a couple of times at least. You'd think you would be able to do that with this, especially when you've got these sorts of tracks where you can capitalize on a bit of mayhem.
Yeah, I think it'd be better still for his argument if he was beating his teammate, but he currently isn't.
Years.
And I think that is the biggest hurdle at the moment. And I don't know, it's not looking promising for him. I love him as I do. I think it's time.
If I have to accept Ricardo going, you have to accept Bottas.
Yeah,
I think that's a fair trade here.
I'd start watching NASCAR maybe if he joined NASCAR, or he could go to IndyCar. Again, there's seats open there. We can't just keep sending the F1 drivers we love but want to retire to IndyCar. see me
No,
with
that's
a
why
graveyard.
NASCAR's there
But
as well.
yeah, like there's only so many other series I can start watching just to support my sort of retired F1 drivers. But
You're going to start watching V8 Supercars down in Australia when
yeah,
Bottas
but
moves there.
that was genuinely what I was thinking. Bottas might also go to, given he's now sort of a pseudo Australian. He might as well join Aussie Supercars. I mean, I get up early at the weekends anyway to watch Aussie NRL, so I'm sort of on their time zone for sports as it is. So we'll see.
There you go.
Speaking of drivers leaving, a driver that's leaving one team and moving to another is Arvid Lindblad.
Yes, he signed up for Campos in Formula 2, which is very good news indeed. He's had an incredibly strong F3 rookie campaign with Prema. And yeah, he's just moving up to join Campos, who at the time of writing are 35 and a half points away from Invicta Racing in the team's championship. So while F2 can be a bit fluid at times, they've really come on leaps and bounds this year. So that's promising for him. Lindblad finished Formula 3 in P4 this year, the highest placed rookie in the field. And won the double at Silverstone, which was a first in Formula 3, if I'm remembering correctly. And he also won the opening sprint in Bahrain and claimed a second place in the sprint in Australia too. So not too shocking this news that he was going to step up. We knew a few of them would be. I'm just quite glad he's up there because he's one of these drivers where, let's face it, Hadjar's probably still going to be in F2 next year. And he's going to be wanting to go for whichever seat at Minardi is available for 26. He's not going to be, I mean, very rarely a happy bunny on team radio anyway, but he's not going to be a very happy bunny if Arvid Lindblad still shows up and goes, "I'll have that, thank you very much." And oh, if I don't get it, doesn't matter because I'm still in about 12.
Yeah, he's sort of very much got the Red Bull advantage of they simply just enjoy hiring fetuses, and he very much is one. Don't change it, are you bastard? Moving on from the Arvid Lindblad stuff to the headline that annoyingly Timo has just changed, which is Callum Ilott to Prindycar. He's off to Prema in IndyCar, which is, I
He's
think
off
it's
to
great.
IndyCar racing for Prema, is what you're trying to say. Yes, it's very
Prindycar.
good news that no one's going to, it's not a thing. Stop trying to make it a thing. Yes, second time covering this news today because I recorded the IndyCar Nashville review where we were talking about this as well. So I have excellent notes for this one, which may even be word for word depending on things. So yeah, it's going to be the first time he's going to have raced with Prema since Formula 3 back in 2017. But at least he knows them. And he wasn't able to secure a seat on the grid this year for IndyCar, but has raced there previously. But he was driving for Aaron McLaren the first two rounds of the year at St. Petersburg and at the Thermal Club, which admittedly they didn't go too well, but he had been out for a while. I'm going to be quite looking forward to seeing this one. As for the second seat, I think we're going to wait, be waiting a while before we get this, because I think that whilst there are options from the rest of the IndyCar field, there are plenty of drivers looking for seats, and a new team is an excellent place to try and bed yourself in. Formula 2, I think, is where some of the talent will be looked upon, and it's going to be after the final race in Abu Dhabi that we get that decision, I think, and we'll know who's getting that Sauber seat by then. We'll know who's comfortable in a reserve capacity for some of the teams, and we'll know who wants to kind of follow in his footsteps in Marcus Armstrong, Christian Lundgaard, these sorts of drivers. And it might not be as done a deal with Logan Sargeant as we originally thought. I'm not sure who I want to see in the second seat yet. I mean, I know I mentioned Ricciardo earlier, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him somewhere else. We could look at someone like Vesti, Porcher. Porcher's obviously hot property in IndyCar these days after his kind of several ins and outs over the course of the season. But I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to enjoy whoever they choose, really. Do you have any particular notion for who you want in that second seat?
I was thinking maybe Haugerud for Vachon. Hauger, I think, is certainly an interesting one because he's a very good racer. And again, there's not really any teams looking to snap him up out of, what is he, is it MP these days, isn't he? So is anyone really sort of looking to bite him off? And he's had some great championship runs, some really good contests over the years. But just, there's not an F1 team that's looking
The
for him.
other name as well is Drugovich. We mustn't forget about him.
This is also very true, very quick driver. I don't know how closely tied he still is to Aston Martin. Another one that I was contemplating, Jack Crawford. I mean, American driver makes
American.
sense. It's not too far-fetched. But at the same time, he's only in what, his second season of F3 2 this year?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so he's got a bit longer to
It always gets
potentially
confusing
marinate.
when drivers spend a lot of time in Formula 3 and then Formula 2, and you wonder when do you make the switch?
Either way, I think he'd be an interesting prospect. But yeah, I think we're going to likely see another European driver make the jump over. Interesting, this is the first year in a row, or first year in some time, that the IndyCar World
There's a Will
Cup.
Buxton quote.
Yeah.
First year in a row.
First year in a row that the first year in a while that the IndyCar World Cup hasn't been won by the Americans. If you t amount all the points of each nationality,
Yes.
the Kiwis have finally won it, I think, this year, wasn't it?
I wouldn't be surprised at that, considering how strong that side was, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much comfort that will be to Willpower after that weekend, but I'm sure that there'll be a celebratory beer or two, maybe, because of that, as opposed to the ones he was having in commiseration. Although he seemed to be having a nice time at Nashville, to be fair, afterwards, he didn't seem to take it too badly.
Anyway, moving back to Formula One from IndyCar, and we've got some special liveries for Singapore. We've got two. We should have had a third, but it was too heavy, which is ironic given that one of the liveries is denim. We'll start with Mercedes, and they are marking their relationship with Petronas. They've got a special livery. It blends some of the colors from the Petronas sort of color scheme onto the car. It looks all right.
Looks quite nice. It's my
Yeah.
favourite of the three. Admittedly, we didn't see one of them, but I still probably would have put it above what Red Bull were meant to have.
Yeah, given what Red Bull were able to produce for like Miami recently, their sort of idea of a special livery is a bit pants. Red Bull were supposed to have a special livery for both Singapore and Austin. They were supposed to be fan designed ones as well, so ones that people had drawn at home, submitted online, but they were scrapped because they were going to be too heavy, which really suggests that that car is in a big pile of
They're
problems right now.
scrambling.
They are fighting for their lives right now, which is interesting. However, sister team Minardi have done a denim livery. I think it's to tie in with Hugo Boss, which is one of their fashion partners. I think I'm right in saying Hugo Boss is the fashion partner for them. So it looks all right, I think. And it's not terrible.
Looks awful.
It's the first livery in 25 years to have a zip on it, I think. I know the old BAR
I think
Honda
there's a
car
reason
did,
for that.
which had a zip
Is it
between its
because it
two
looks
liveries.
terrible?
It,
Yes.
it, I, look, I like denim. This is a known
We know.
fact. So I quite like it. It
Doesn't
looks
mean it's a good thing.
good. However, it doesn't look as good as the old Jeans Beetle or the Levi's Gremlin. If you've not seen either of those, specifically the Levi's Gremlin, give it a Google. Looks fantastic. It's done in like the indigo blue color, and it's got literal Levi's denim upholstery on the inside. Anyway, that's
I think
by the by.
because Yuki likes it so much, they should make him wear denim jeans in the race instead of the race suit, and he will suffer the consequences of that.
Oh, I've run a 5K in jeans before, and let me tell you, I wouldn't want to be doing 300K in a race car in jeans in the Singapore heat.
In
You would
Singapore,
die.
never mind anywhere else.
Your legs would just stew. You'd just be ball soup by the end of it. That'd be horrid. Moving away from the idea of ball soup in jeans in a Formula One car in Singapore to something a bit more fun, which is Lego are teaming up with Formula One in 2025 for a new range of products. There'll be an enhanced presence of the Danish toy company at Formula One events moving forwards, and there is a new planned range that spans from Duplo for younger builders, Timo, to kits for the adult enthusiast as well. The full product launch dates are set to be announced in due course, but in my opinion, this is jolly exciting because I like Lego.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to spending money I shouldn't on whatever they've got to offer, really, to be honest. I'm looking forward to it already. I was quite chuffed that we've got a Lego Formula E car and a Lego Extreme E car, but that was kind of the furthest you were getting with some of them. You got maybe a little Mercedes before or a
You
little
could get the
McLaren.
big Mercedes and the big McLaren,
Well,
but
yeah,
I think
I was saying that, so I was thinking of the big one.
they're possibly going
But
bigger
it's nice
still.
to have a bit more options here and potentially some elements of tracks that you could have as well, actually. I don't know how you'd go about doing that, but I'm sure they've thought of ways.
Well, you know, you can get like the little city skyline ones. I think they'd be doing something on that scale that sort of looks like a circuit. I think that'd be quite good. So it'd be about the size of like a big coaster. I think it'd be
I would
something
say
like
that
that.
you've had before as well, back when Michael Schumacher was at Ferrari, you did have the Lego
F1
pit lane
2004. Oh
that you
yeah,
had there, and
the pit, the Ferrari
kind of, you
pit
could get
truck,
it
wasn't it?
in portions, because you could have a pit truck, you could have bits of the garage, et cetera, you'd have the car, a few of the team working on it with equipment, that sort of thing, and then you could obviously put it all together, as was the way with Lego back then, so you didn't need to buy it all in one go. But we've not had much since then, since the ones we've just mentioned, so to get an actual team up
I
where
mean,
there's potentially a lot more coming should be good fun.
So
I
no, they
want
do
them
the
to
speed
bring out the golf
champions.
livery on the Williams and make that out of Lego. That would be excellent.
So no, they do the little speed champion set. So I've got the Mercedes one there, the sort of F1 car for the road, which comes with the Mercedes F1 car from a similar era, which I think I have
Yes.
Bottas's numbers on, but and I have the Mercedes one in my room. All the other Lego has to be stored in the spare room because I have quite a lot. So I'm just an overgrown child. Anyway, moving on from Lego and Formula One back to the Singapore Grand Prix. And there's been one important change you ought to know going into the weekend, which is the Marina Bay circuit has a fourth DRS zone. It sits between turn 14 and 16, which is the new long run that used to have the double chicane and a grandstand in it. That was obviously removed. It's been removed due to building works in the marina. So last year, the zone would have been added, but the FIA wanted to check car behavior through the fast left-hand kink of 15. Now that they're convinced that bit of the circuit's safe and they know that there's sort of sufficient walls, marshal points, runoff areas, fire extinguishers, and so on, they've said, look, you can go faster through it. Here's a DRS zone. The existing zones are out of turns 5, 13, and 19. So this makes Marina Bay only the second circuit to have four DRS zones, Albert Park being the other one. And there will be further revisions made to the circuit in 2026 as the development and construction work around the marina is completed.
I'm all for it. It's going to be fun to see a fourth opportunity for Stroll to absolutely bin it at high speed. So that's also an interesting opportunity here. But in terms of where to put a fourth one, it makes that perfect sense. And I'm glad they actually took a sensible approach for something for a change. But let's see what it looks like first. And then we'll add it later instead of just whacking something on and going, yeah, this seems fine.
Yeah, I too was quite impressed by the sort of thoughtful
Competence.
approach to it. Yeah, it was pretty good. With that in mind, though, it's time to get a little bit chaotic and lay down some predictions. And as ever, we'll start with pole position. We'll start with Ellie Mae, who's not here this evening. She's feeling a little bit under the weather, but she has submitted her predictions. She's muscled up the strength. She's gone for Carlos Sainz on pole, which makes sense. He was pretty decent there last year. He's on a good turn of form at the moment. We'll see what he can do. I've gone for the other half of the Ferrari garage of Charles Leclerc. Timo, you've gone a little bit of different.
I've just gone for Lewis Hamilton because he loves Singapore. And we all remember that qualifying lap from a few years ago. And I'm still on my Mercedes exiting, Mercedes exiting, Hamilton exiting Mercedes tour. So maybe he can make the magic happen twice here.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. It'd be nice to see. Meanwhile, when we get to the podium at the other end of the race, Ellie Mae has gone for Lando Norris, taking the win, Oscar Piastri second, and Carlos Sainz third. She thinks that the championship fight from Norris is going to roll on a bit longer. I've gone a little bit the other way. I've gone for Oscar Piastri takes his third win of the season and of his career. Lando Norris goes second, Charles Leclerc third. Timo, you've gone for a little bit of a remix of mine with a slightly different flavour.
Yeah, I think the championship should go on a bit further, but with Leclerc kind of leading the charge there, I still quite like that idea over Norris. With Piastri hot in his heels in P2 just to make things awkward for McLaren. And then because it's Singapore, we've got to have something a bit different. And also, it's been a little while, so let's put Fernando Alonso on the podium in P3.
I don't think it's unexpectable. I think it's quite reasonable. Fastest lap, Ellie Mae has gone for Lando Norris. I've gone for Carlos Sainz. And Timo, you've gone for Max Verstappen.
Well, we might as well get something this weekend.
He needs the extra point to try and fend off Lando Norris or Charles Leclerc, more likely at this point in time. And then we
Exactly.
get to the wild predictions. Ellie Mae has gone for Ben and drives in Singapore, which is quite bold.
Bold.
Yeah, I don't know who for.
I don't
I'd
know
like to see
whose
it.
shins are getting hit with a cricket bat to make it happen, but if
Yeah,
it's poor Hulk
perhaps
or
that's
if
why
it's
she's not
Magnussen,
here.
but.
She's out there at the
She's just gone
moment.
up and claims to be under the weather, but it's actually just the insufferable heat from Singapore, and she's just clobbering someone in the shins.
Well, Sauber do still run Ferrari engines, correct?
Yes.
So, what's the likelihood she's currently tracking down
I
Valtteri
mean,
Bottas and
to
sort
be
of pushing him
fair,
off his bicycle?
the funniest thing would be if he drove that car at a point, first of all, just because it's that car. But then also breaks his own record immediately in his third race, scoring points for a third different team.
Yeah, I
Now
think
that's
it.
an extra bold prediction, and I kind of want to make that as well now, but I kind of like what Ellie Mae's got there because I don't think I'm going to be able to make that happen. It's already tricky enough as it is.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if the extrapolated point comes through post-race. In the
You,
meantime.
if that happens, I feel like any time any of us would then see Valtteri Bottas in person, you would have to stop, point, and laugh. It would only
Yeah.
be right.
Yeah. I think
I
it would
would
only be
shake
you'd
your
have
hand, a
to,
torso.
yeah. Can I get a quick selfie and then also Singapore 24, mate? Come on. I've gone for Wainz. I think we're going to get some more Williams points. They seem to be on a good form at the moment. It's a car that might
Is this
struggle a
have
little
you just
bit.
been whacked on the head and you don't know how to spell anymore?
I
You're
look,
just
I like
making up shit.
portmanteaus of stuff, pushing words together. It's fun. It's
Have you done a
creative.
marketing course or something?
No, not yet. It's something I probably ought to go on at some point as a journalist. But anyway,
I don't think it would. I
Wainz.
don't think it'll do you benefit if this is the kind of stuff we're going to be getting out of it.
It might get better if I do the marketing course. Anyway,
I
Wainz,
don't
Williams
think it will.
points. It's a tricky circuit for the Williams. Baku is very, and Imola or Monza rather are more their sort of circuit. But Singapore's got some big straights. That new DRS zone might make it a bit easier for them to defend. We'll see. I mean, the Williams was doing all right defending from a couple of cars when it was way up the field in like third place or something in Baku. So with a bit of
Very
luck
satisfying to
and a
see
bit
that he
of
was just there on pace for a good while, but also entirely feasible that your prediction could happen if mine also happens to come true, because if only 10 cars finish the Grand Prix, they just need to stay out of trouble and then
yeah,
they can get some points.
which
And
is
that is
a
also
good
my
way
work
for them doing
prediction.
it. Yeah, so you said only 10 cars will finish the Grand Prix. A 50% finish rate is, we haven't had something that low for a little while, but it'd be exciting to see. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, that wraps up our predictions, unless you've got anything else to chuck in.
Singapore. I just hope that we were cautiously optimistic about getting a decent Baku, and we got one. So I'm going to take that same cautious optimism again into Singapore. And not that we had a bad one last year, we had an absolute cracker race, possibly the best Grand Prix of last season. But I'm looking forward to it. It's F1's original night race. We've got an extra DRS zone. We've got some spicy stuff going there, so it should be good fun.
It should be a very interesting race weekend, and it'd be nice to see how it goes. And obviously, F1 Academy there too should provide an additional round of crackery spiciness. Otherwise, that's all we've got time for on this week's episode. It's been a relatively quick one. We like rattling through the previews when it's just the two of us. In the meantime, if you want any more of us, Timo, where can you be found?
This week, you can find me over on Is It Faster? Over a brand new interview with Jenny Silventoinen, who's a Finnish racing driver, and we always do like the Finns in motorsports, so do go and check that out.
Lovely stuff. And of course, you've already mentioned the Across the Pond IndyCar podcast as well, which is
Yes,
also
which
worth
is
a little
already
bit of
out, by
listen.
the way.
Go
So
give that a
definitely go listen
little
to that.
honk.
We should be having some more driver into well, some actual driver interviews as well, actually, in the off season now that they've all got a bit of spare time, and we'll have a season review for that and Indy next. And when we've run out of all of that, NASCAR will still probably be going, so we'll probably just dip into that a little bit and go, what's been going on here then?
Talk about NASCAR for a bit. I mean, there was a great thing earlier today that said there was a tweet going, you just found out Alexander Rossi is going to be on the Talk Tour podcast later this week, which is the one from the Hawk Tour
Dear
girl.
Lord.
And he just retweeted it going, she wishes. clearly he's not. I love the fact
Thank
that he's
God.
just, I love the fact that he's just unhinged on Twitter. Like all of the IndyCar drivers are just let alone to use Twitter, which is quite funny. Whereas Franco Colapinto, they've had to take his phone away from him because he was a bit of a riot on Twitter. But anyway, that's IndyCar. If you want more of me, you can of course pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly. Yesterday, at the time of recording, was the 60th anniversary of the release of the film Goldfinger. So we've got a feature looking at all the cars that James Bond ever drove on the silver screen, plus some other bits and pieces. So worth
I'm
picking that
saying you
one up
don't
and
have
giving
to
a
be
read.
doing with just for Goldfinger, never mind all 25 films. You're going to be there. You might as well just forget about the rest of the magazine.
I mean, yeah, it's a good like chunky feature in the middle of the paper. It's quite well written, and we've sort of blasted through all of the cars that are there. It's quite good. Otherwise, you can find me across social media as at Jesse on Cars, constantly posting photographs from the Goodwood Revival and any of the other racing bits I've been up to. And of course, the ongoing debacle of trying to make my MG work again because it's dead.
Again,
Again, yeah, it may have thrown most of the
who
bottom.
installed all of the stuff into it? Oh, yeah,
An
never
engineer
mind.
from RB, actually. So.
Oh, was it? It wasn't just you.
I played a part in it as well, but yeah. Look, I
Was
trusted
it
the
more of a
MG.
70-30 part? And he went, oh no, you should let me do this. And he went, no, I know what I'm doing.
I should have probably inspected the engine that I bought sight unseen for 350 quid off of Facebook before putting it in my car.
It's almost as if the signs were there.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what I'm spending a lot of my time doing at the moment. And yeah, so. please stay in touch with that one. Otherwise, thank you to our listeners in Lewis and Harris in the Outer Hebrides. The dot technically shows up on the map as Stornoway, but I've looked a little further afield into the island to find the Isle of Harris Distillery and a bottle of the Hiraccor single malt or the Sugar Kelp gin would go down marvellously. I'm sure Timo will agree with me on that one.
Happily take the former. Yes, I'm much more a whiskey man than a gin man, so I'll happily take care of that.
I like a gin, but I don't mind a whiskey, especially a nice sort of Scottish single malt. Nonetheless, we thank all of you for listening, and all of our listeners around the world, to which there is still a surprising amount of you. So thank you, and please send us alcohol. Thank you very much for listening, and of course, one day it will work, and you will thank me for doing this. Thank you very much for listening, and of course, we'll be back after the Singapore Grand Prix with a review of all of the action from Marina Bay.